Have you at least had a goddamn moment where you're like,
define scare?
Like, you're like, I think I just shit my pants. No, I need to go to the bathroom and fucking
I've
you are lying to me. Two recommendations for everyone listening on Patreon are a show about the Red Ranger from like a Super Sentai show being sent to another world, and a show about a vampire grooming a young boy.
The duality of seasonals, honestly. Really.
Well, do we want to run an intro then and get into the meat of what we want to talk about with this episode?
Yeah, I guess I could do the fucking intro.
For one.
Welcome to another episode of the Weeb Crew. As always, I'm your host, Boomy. Today we got just Sai.
Yeah, I'm just here. We don't have a guest.
No one's special today.
We really haven't had a guest on in a while.
It's been a minute.
It's been a couple episodes. I guess, like, yeah, looking at it, it's been a little bit over a month. We need to get another guest on this podcast.
They're on, like, streams.
People are going to get tired of listening to just us.
Justice?
Justice. Justice. Join the Discord, by the way, everyone.
good place to shill.
Yeah, this, so like we said, we're going to do weekly episodes this year. Try that out. And as a result, you know, sometimes it'll just be like, you know, just a short, more casual episode of Mumi and I just talking about the anime we've been watching.
Well, part of it,
we watch a lot of anime.
Part of it is what, like, we have discussions about stuff a lot.
Yes.
Not just us, but like with the people that we end up group watching stuff with. Like, was it last season? There was a lot of discussions revolving around my wife is an elementary schooler. Like, couple of debates. We talk pretty frequently about stuff, and so I was like, well,
we're not
capitalizing on the fact that we just sit here and waste like an hour's worth of content debating this shit that you could, you know, slap a sticker on, put a thumbnail on, and sell as a content.
We've become a horribly content brain because now we're just like, oh man, why aren't we turning this into something we can upload online? Which is a horrible way to think, honestly.
And now we are. Now we're uploading this online. So the subject of today's episode.
Yeah, get the cum out of your throat, buddy. It's all right. You're good. Jesus fucking Christ.
Been sucking.
You were just saying, like, you know, giving me shit for having to turn on the goddamn heat in my apartment. Now here you are just, like, hacking up fucking phlegm like you're dying of tuberculosis or some shit. What the fuck?
It was, like, 50 degrees. It was pretty nice today, actually.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah, the debate we had yesterday, well, I say we. I was partially in it. It ended up going for, like, an extra hour and a half after I kind of dipped out.
Yeah, I ended up talking with like Lex Torius about it and then just kind of rambling in my blog for a bit.
So, Sai, you have a problem with specifically we were talking about Hanashura.
Yeah, the new show airing this season from Studio, but I think we talked about it a little bit on the last episode. New show from Studio Bind, Hanashura. Or like Flower and Asura, the hell the English title
for
is.
For those who aren't
something like that
caught up or didn't listen to that episode, it's basically about this girl who likes to do like prose and reading and stuff.
Yeah.
And she gets recruited to join this broadcasting club. And it seems very much based around this sort of like competitive reading of prose, reading of poems, stories, stuff like that. And, you know, you get scored on how you're reading it, how engrossing it is, I guess, stuff like that.
Which, for context, it's also written by the same woman. It's a manga adaptation, but I believe it's written by the same woman who wrote the novels for Hibike Euphonium. Yes. So it's very similar in that regard. And I wouldn't say I have a problem with the show as much as I have like a concern going forward, because one of my big problems that I had with like Hibike Euphonium is how central the competitive aspect was to the show and the idea of music, that it kind of ended up basically consuming, like, you know, the creative aspect of music, the artistic aspect of music.
Sure.
That's not really a big part of Hibike. And so my early concern now, like having watched this most recent episode, episode 3, is I'm wondering if that, if this show then is also going to be going down a similar route. And it kind of seems like it is.
So, I mean, we can't really say to Hanashura quite yet.
No.
It's for, what, episode 2 or 3 at this point?
Episode 3, yeah.
So we don't have a firm basis. But it's an interesting subject to talk about, and specifically more so, yeah. I guess, in the context of like Hibike Euphonium. And anyone who listens to this on Patreon, you ducked me, you cowered it out. You pulled meta to come talk about Hibike Euphonium the last time you talked about it.
That was you and me. Why do you keep thinking that I recorded something with Matt? We literally talked about
this. You're just wrong.
No. Go back and listen to that episode. It's literally you.
Go back.
I don't know what you're talking.
If you don't have the Patreon, you can't go back. There's no going back.
You literally managed the Patreon. I sent you the file. Listen to it. It's your voice.
Oh my God. That would be funny if you actually just like used AI and put my voice over meta the whole episode. It's like,
we did talk about it on Patreon. I forget, this was like a few months ago, maybe a year ago. And the basic idea, I still have not seen Hibike season 3 yet. But I just finished watching like up through season 2 of Hibike Euphonium. And I was kind of like, man, does anyone here enjoy playing their instrument?
No.
It doesn't seem like it.
So I guess we'll get down to brass tacks. Why do you hate Hanashura and Hibike Euphonium?
I don't hate Hibike Euphonium for what it's worth, but it is just kind of like a thing that frustrated me watching the show, where it's like, does anyone like it's, I mean, it's like, yeah, that is like my core issue is like, does anyone like just enjoy making music? Because like there's so much drama based around like the competitive aspect and, you know, being able to be good enough to be like in the in the band that actually goes to these competitions and competes and all that stuff.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, that's a perfectly fine thing, but it kind of. It's such a strong focus. It's really the only focus in a lot of regards that it's kind of, it gives me the impression that it's just kind of like, does anyone actually like get anything out of this creatively? Does anyone in the show like, you know, play like their music, play their instrument just for fun? And that's, if anything, And this is maybe the route that it seems like Hanashura is taking, is that it seems like this author, I don't know her name off the top of my head, but it seems like he is not big on the idea of art for art's sake, doing art for fun kind of thing. She seems to be very critical of that at the very least.
Yeah.
Because with Hibike Euphonium, you know, there's like this like core dilemma, especially in season 1, where it's like, okay, well, do we want to be doing music for fun or do we want to be doing music like competitively? And already it's kind of like, I mean, is there a harsh dichotomy there? Does doing something competitively mean it no longer becomes fun? And you know, what is it, you know, where does the fun come from, you know, doing something competitively? Does the fun come from winning or does the fun come from doing that thing? And especially in the context of, you know, creating a work of art in a competitive context, I feel like the core appeal there should still be in not winning, but performing, making that piece of art rather than like, you know, oh, we made it to nationals or whatever. Like, it would be nice, sure, but it's also like, you know, you get to do the thing, you know, you get to perform, you get to create something beautiful. And it seems like through Hibike Euphonium, no one really appreciates that. And as someone, you know, who does music, someone who did band in high school, it makes me think back, like, you know, when I did like symphonic band in high school, it was like, I was a snot-nosed little fucking brat. I didn't really, you know, understand what was going on or really appreciate, you know, the music that we were making. And in retrospect, I really think that I honestly should have. I think that would have been a very, like, valuable experience. I don't know if anyone in Hibike Euphonium really feels that way, which kind of sucks.
I hear you. So I'm hearing that you hate Liz and the Bluebird. Naoka Yamada is fucking overrated as fuck. Okay, I get it. I hear
that is like one of the parts that I think I really appreciate about Liz and the Bluebird is it was about the music and it reminded me of something like Kids on the Slope, where like the music is essentially like the vehicle for these characters communicating between one another. The music becomes like this sort of like conversation. There's like almost like a sort of subtext built into it. You know, that's how like they navigate their relationships is through that music in Liz and the Bluebird. And to a certain extent, that also still exists in Hibike Euphonium. But not really a lot. And again, the whole like perspective of like, does Hibike like enjoy making music with her euphonium? Or, you know, does she like, what, why is she doing this? Why is she in this band? Why is she so driven to compete? Yeah,
why is Hibike in this band? Would you say that Liz and the Bluebird was the first band anime that was about the music?
No. I mean, I have no idea.
Oh.
I haven't seen every band. I haven't seen like Beck. I should probably watch Beck, honestly. So then my main concern then going into something like Hanashura is that in this most recent episode, it seems to be basically setting up the main character, Hana. You know, she wants to, compete in some capacity. But, you know, she's afraid that, you know, if she doesn't do well when competing, then it will rob her of this thing that she enjoys. It means that she is actually just no good at it. And the theme of the episode, the core lesson that she like starts to learn at the end of the episode is basically like, well, you should just practice. So, you know, then people won't think you suck, which in some ways that's good advice. But at the same time, shouldn't she also, you know, literally have the confidence in her own voice to not necessarily need validation from others? Or is the idea then, you know, is this like this idea that this author likes that competition and winning competitions is like the most valuable form of validation that you can get as an artist? Because I don't really agree with that, if that's the case.
I do not think that that's where it's going. So, lore drop. I don't know. I feel like I've talked about this. I feel like we've talked about this in the first episode. I, too, was in band in high school.
Yeah, well, you did marching band.
Everyone did marching band because you did half the year.
Did you also do symphonic band?
Yeah, you had like you just took band as a class half the year.
And you had to do both?
Half the year was focused on marching band for like practices and stuff. The other half was focused on symphonic and wind ensemble, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I, too, had this experience.
We're both loser band geeks. I hope that probably explains like why the way we are.
Explains a lot.
Explains a lot.
Post in the comments below what instrument you think each of us played. Based on just what you're gaining from this. Anyway.
It'll be interesting to see like what we'll guess if like anyone guesses and like what they think we played.
I feel like it would be pretty obvious, but maybe not.
Maybe. You do have like dick sucking lips.
Jesus Christ.
There's your clue, everyone. Mumi's great at sucking dick. I'm great at giving hand jobs. All right. There you go. Figure it out.
I was very vested in like the marching band stuff. Because I liked the shows. I liked the general effects and all that. One of the shows that I got really into like marching band as like a thing. There was a local, I say local, like I live, dox myself. Oh no, I live in the DFW Metroplex, so there's like trillions of people here.
Yeah, you're really narrowing it down.
But there is a school around here that is, well, I don't think they are anymore, but they were quite well known for their marching band program because they're like a military school. And they did a program in 2007, which is when I was in high school. So old. It was a show based around Pan's Labyrinth, and they won this national competition with it. Like that kind of shit is like what I really got into, like marching band for. Mm-hmm. So I actually did not really give a shit about like wind ensemble or concert band, whatever. I was literally only in it for marching band, and it got to a point,
right.
It literally got to a point where I was like, dog, I have zero interest in all this concert band shit. I didn't try out for the placements or anything. I was just like, I'm just here for marching band. That's all. I don't care. Yeah.
Well, I think, I don't know, maybe it kind of speaks to like, you know, our diverging hobbies. You don't really do a lot of music. I at least do some music. Which, you know, may also just be simply be reflected in that sort of like difference in interest when it comes to band.
It is funny. I don't do music. I can fuck with people though, because I can tune a guitar by ear and I can read music. And so people were, I went to a friend's place one time. I was fucking around with a guitar and I was like tuning it. And someone was like, walked in, like, I thought you'd never played a guitar before. How are you doing that? So I was just like, what do you mean?
Like, it's. I understand how a scale works.
Apparently, most people that play guitar cannot read music. That is a common thing.
Yeah, because like guitar has its own like weird like tablature and stuff.
But yeah, I'm not super. Like, I like music. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not super vested in performing.
It's not your creative outlet. Right.
Like, there's like five creative outlets above. Playing music.
One of them is podcasting, mind
one
you.
Of them one of them is talking on the internet.
let that say how far like music is down on the totem pole for me.
Listen, all right, talking on the internet, it's about talking
surely
about
there
anime.
Were people in band that really liked music, right? Like if, even in my personal experience, there were a lot of people who were in band that were just like, I need the credit, you know, I need like some sort of like What's the term? Elective activity, you know?
Yeah, there were a lot of kids that were really into band. Like, we had, so my high school, they had four different band programs. So when you tried out, there was like first band, second band, third band, fourth band. The kids that were in first and second band were obviously very, first band, they were very, really into music because you had to beat like fucking. What, like 200 other kids, 250 other kids to get in that band. So they were all really into music. Kids of second band were generally into music. Once you got into like third and fourth band, people were just kind of like shooting the shit. No one, I mean, they weren't super vested.
Yeah, we were just hanging
out. Not that we didn't like it, but we just.
That's kind of the thing. A lot of people also just join band and just like, oh, I'm hanging out with my friends. It's a fun thing to do still, but it doesn't necessarily like. Extend into like a personal thing. You may not necessarily have like a strong enthusiasm or affinity for playing their instrument. Right.
So you're approaching this specifically from a music aspect in the sense of like they are being competitive or they want to like strive for a goal as an ensemble, and so this is how they engage with music, period. I don't think that's the case, because I mean, people, that's just how generally people learn stuff, is it's like when you're learning an instrument, when you're playing it in a ensemble like that, you kind of have like that sort of group, what would you call it? Like you kind of have a responsibility to the rest of the group to learn the instrument more. Or at least there's like more peer pressure because like they're also learning it with you.
Right.
And then when you get into like a competitive setting, then it's kind of like there are attainable goals that you can achieve and you can work toward and strive toward and have like a physical sort of thing, like a tangible sort of thing to achieve that kind of shows like some progress that you've made. That kind of thing works for a lot of people as far as like motivating them to learn something. It might not necessarily be the motivator for them. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is, that is the motivator. But it, oftentimes it does help even the people that are into, you know, learning the piano or learning saxophone or whatever, them competing in this sort of like playful kind of camaraderie sort of thing and having to play the solo better or whatever, quote unquote better, helps them sort of improve in what they're wanting to do. Like, I mean,
it can, but it's a question of, but is that the end all be all? Like there are so many kids nowadays that are being, you know, a violin is being put in their hand. They're being put in front of a piano at a very young age, and they're being put in these competitive contexts, regardless of whether or not they actually like, you know, they can become very, very good at that instrument, regardless of whether or not they actually enjoy playing that instrument. And you can kind of, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, in terms of like, well, who's actually going to stick with this long term based on whether or not they actually enjoy playing that instrument in and of itself. So my problem then with Hibike is that it kind of feels like that's all that matters for everyone. And it's a very large cast, a very large ensemble cast. And it kind of comes across like they're like, again, my question is, does anyone enjoy actually playing their instrument? Does anyone enjoy playing their trumpet or their clarinet or their flute or anything like that? Does anyone, you know, it's one thing to do it to want to compete, to do it for a competitive aspect. But is that the only thing that matters to everyone?
I mean, that's some of the character arcs in the show, right? Because Asuka, as like just an example, like Kumiko's arc is that she didn't like playing the euphonium in middle school, and she wanted to not play it in high school. And then she ends up getting kind of roped into doing it. She still doesn't really like it. But seeing the passion of Reina for this competition that she didn't really care for, because she didn't care about playing the euphonium to begin with, kind of sparks her to kind of be more invested into learning the euphonium. And then she gets put with Asuka, and Asuka really kind of helps push her and drive her to learn the euphonium, where she kind of takes after her example and is able to kind of find her own passion for the euphonium outside of just competition, just playing with Reina, just playing with Asuka or whatever. And even Asuka, like, she kind of, I mean, she likes playing the euphonium, but she also has like a lot of baggage with playing the euphonium. And so the whole second season is kind of about her letting go of that baggage to just enjoy playing the euphonium for herself and with Kumiko, and like having that camaraderie without having the kind of baggage of like, oh, I'm going to play to meet my dad or whatever the fuck. I feel like this is like setting a dichotomy that's not really there. Like,
well, so like those are all specific characters, but again, even then, the appreciation of their music, of their instrument, and what they're doing is still like, it's still tied to that band setting. And so my point is like, would any of these characters enjoy and actually be motivated to actually continue making art and continue making music outside of that setting? And if, you know, and certainly that doesn't need to be the case for everyone, but is it not at least the case for someone? I don't, like, that's kind of like, I never got that sense, really. Like, it seems to be like their interest in music sans, you know, without the competitive aspect, without the band aspect, would just never really be actualized. And that may be true for some people, certainly, but I don't think it's true for everyone. But it seems to be true for everyone in Hibike.
I mean, part of the problem is the story of Hibike is that basically of like a sports story, right? So right. You filter out a lot of the people that might not be into this sort of thing or like competition or all that with the first season where they're like, hey, we're going to shoot for nationals and we're going to fucking work our ass off. If you're not into that, quit.
And I guarantee you that people who would be the people who are the most dedicated to working their ass off and learning their instrument are the people who love people who go on to do it professionally. Are the people who love playing their instrument, regardless of any of that.
Sure.
So I don't think that there's necessarily like a clear, like, you know, a strict binary between the two. I think it would have been interesting to see a character who really, really, like, you know, wanted to win, really wanted to go to nationals, but at the same time had like a deep and profound love just for like their instrument and the music they were making in and of itself. And maybe part of the motivation then for them wanting to compete, for them wanting to go to nationals, is to be able to display that, you know, being able to share that with a larger audience.
I feel like part of the problem is I feel like you're projecting a bit of the experience of like your experience onto this mm-hmm. in a way that's not necessarily applicable, because you have experience more in like not a orchestra setting, but like playing with like five people, right? Like as a band.
Mm-hmm.
That is much different than like playing as an orchestra. Like if you want to play as an orchestra, mm-hmm. This is kind of the route you kind of have to go with. You can't just like, oh, I want to go.
Well, I mean, you look at by far and away for most working musicians, they kind of do both. If you're like a.
Yeah, you can do both. I'm not saying that. But it depends on the instrument. Like, you get more mileage.
I don't think it does, honestly. I think that if you look at any professional orchestra, if you take anyone from that orchestra, regardless of what instrument they play, that person truly and deeply loves the instrument that they are
sure,
playing.
Sure, but like, you're not going to be able, you're like someone that wants to play the saxophone is they get more mileage out of playing the saxophone by themselves than maybe going to a bar or something than someone that plays the tuba, right? Someone that plays the tuba you're kind of a supporting instrument. There's not really an outlet for you to just go, I'm going to go play a tuba solo. You can't go to a bar. You can't go to a dueling tuba piano bar or something. Like, there are certain.
I can guarantee you, I could pull up a myriad of jazz songs right now that feature tuba solos.
Okay, but that's.
They exist.
Tuba solo in a jazz song is not the same as a solo act tuba player.
Okay, well, it's a similar thing to like, well, what about bass players in rock music? You know, that's also like largely like a supporting instrument.
Uh huh.
But at the same time, there are people who really, really love playing bass.
Okay.
And even if it's not necessarily like, you know, like, oh, it's like a jazz setting and they're like playing bass and improvising and it's like just pure self-expression. Even if it's something that has already been written for them and put in front of them, odds are they're going to have like a very like they are still going to enjoy playing that music, learning that music and making that thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're making like this false. I don't think that that's disqualifying of like the people in the play. So like you see, was it Hizuki? Is that what her name is? The girl who starts learning the tuba? Mm-hmm. Like, she forms her own. Like, she would have had nothing to do with the tuba if it weren't for Kumiko and Sapphire joining band and her being friends with them and, like, wanting to join with them, essentially. And through that,
mm-hmm.
she is then able to find her own love of playing the tuba. You cannot, mm-hmm. like... You cannot take that and just go play the tuba by yourself. So like you kind of are going to have to do it within this setting most of the time. Like, yeah, you can practice on your own and she does and they have sectionals and they practice with other tuba players. But like you're not just doing a solo act. So like I feel like the idea that like they are less into playing the music than somebody that's like learning the guitar in their house by themselves is not like it's a false dichotomy, because it's like they're still practicing and learning these instruments on their own. Like, you can't.
Mm-hmm. But do they enjoy that, is my point.
Well, yeah.
Can you? Well, that's like the whole... Can they sit down and practice their sheet music and enjoy that in and of itself?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's like part of the arcs of the show. That's like the whole thing with like Kumiko, where she learns to really love the namesake of the show, that piece that Asuka plays. Mm-hmm. That's something she likes to play herself. That is a song that she likes to perform. That is an expression mm-hmm. of her enjoying to play the instrument, right? Mm-hmm. So there are like, yeah, we are focused in on Kumiko and Reina and Asuka for second season, Sapphire somewhat and Hazuki somewhat.
I mean, it's a pretty large, like it borders on being an ensemble cast. And if Kumiko wasn't the club therapist, it basically just would be an ensemble cast, which I think that maybe is just the core of my issue, is that we have all these characters, we have all these different perspectives, but they all kind of seem to operate in a very similar manner at the end of the day.
I mean, the girl who played the flute, is that what it was? In Liz and the Bluebird. Some fucking Naoko Yamada stan's gonna fucking massacre me because I don't know Kaori. Her name off the top of my head.
It's Kaori, isn't it?
No, Kaori is the trumpet section leader in season one.
Oh, no, Mizore. Yeah. There we go. This character looks too different in Liz and the Bluebird.
True. She plays just because she likes playing, but she doesn't have any interest in the competition aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's another character. Like there, yeah. You get this representation of characters.
Well, sure. But again, that's why I like Liz and the Bluebird more.
But she's in the show.
She's not really that much.
She's not as prominent as she is in Liz and the Bluebird, but she's still in the show. And like, she's like that's kind of just like, that's like a insight into the rest of the cast. Cause she gets about as much focus as like most of the other characters in the band, or honestly she gets more focus than most of the characters in the band, because it's like a band of what, there's like 60-70 kids in that band. I don't know,
I have no idea.
I could probably like describe like 10-15 of them. I can tell you the names of a handful. Yeah. Like there's a lot of them.
It's the Legend of Galactic Heroes of music anime.
But like, yeah, like all these characters have like a similar-ish amount of screen time. She got more screen time than a lot of them in the second season or first season.
Mm-hmm.
You see that like when you dig deeper on the surface, they have these kind of motivations. Everyone kind of has their own story. I think that because that they're in this like setting of like, this is like a group goal, right? It's like being on a team sport. You're kind of like that. Because you were focused on kind of working toward this shared goal and everyone's kind of hyper focused and trying to improve in that regard, I don't think that necessarily disqualifies them from not liking their instrument. Like Blue Box airing this season. Yeah, when competition's going on, he's like really focused in. Because they're kind of working toward this like shared goal and have this shared interest doesn't mean that they don't have their own sort of vested interests or personal interests in likes and dislikes and stuff, right? I feel like it's a false dichotomy that's being formed because it is a band story that is like a sports story, right? Like this is just the vehicle in which they're exploring playing in a orchestra. And they right. kind of do it through this medium of it being kind of like a sports narrative. To make it, I would say to make that probably more universal, because people that aren't into competition stuff like can at least probably identify like things that they kind of relate to with that, right? Like someone probably played fucking baseball when they were like 12 years old and is like, oh, I can recognize this sort of feeling with like this competition in band, even though I never played an instrument. So I feel like it's just a the way that the story is being presented, I don't know if it necessarily is endorsing that this is the correct way to engage with and enjoy playing music. You know what I mean?
Maybe. Well, I think that's what makes Hanashura interesting, is that it's not a group activity. Hana in Hanashura already has like a very like, you know, a predefined package in love for her craft. She loves reading. And so going forward, what I'm wondering is like, okay, what are they going to do with that? Is she going to continue to love reading, or is she going to love competing, or is she going to be able to do both? Because I could very much see, like, you know, for the sake of drama, for the sake of storytelling, the way it turns out is like she ends up competing, and maybe, you know, at some point she doesn't end up doing that well, and she's like completely crushed by that, and maybe, like, you know, falls out of love. She doesn't want to like do any more recitations or anything like that anymore. So what I'm wondering then is like, okay, what's the idea going to be then? What's the message going to be? Is it going to be that, you know, she eventually gets back on the horse and competes again, and this time wins? Or is it going to be that she is able to still find a love and appreciation for reading, for making this art, without necessarily needing to be validated by a competition?
I mean, I feel like it's like putting the cart before the horse in a way. I don't think the validation she's seeking is coming solely from the competition. I think the competition is reflective of the validation she's seeking. Because like you see it in the most recent episode 3, as we're recording this. I'm sure it's going to go up on YouTube when episode 5's out, but
I don't know. When is episode 5 supposed to come out? This goes up in like 2 days. So.
On YouTube?
Oh, I guess on YouTube. Yeah. It'll be a little bit later.
Regardless, from that, the last episode we watched, she kind of expresses like this apprehension of kind of engaging in the thing that she enjoys in this way. Like, she has an interest in it, but she's also like, I don't want to do this and then kind of be like, figure out that I'm worthless at it. Like,
yeah. Well, what she says specifically, cause I screenshotted this, is, you know, I had nothing else. So if people think that I suck, then I really would have nothing. And I don't think, the main love interest of the show, her tomboy senpai, says, you know, then just work as hard as you can so that no one thinks you suck. I don't know if that's necessary. That is like a way to approach it. I don't know if it's necessarily a good way, because I think the lesson that she needs to learn here is that, you know, it doesn't matter if you win. Not winning does not mean you don't have anything. It does not mean that this is still not your art, your craft, that you are putting this thing out into the world. So what I'm wondering is, going forward, is like, what is that lesson that she is going to learn? Is it going to be about her being validated from this external thing, from this competition, or is it going to be about her sort of, you know, learning to find the confidence, you know, is literally within herself, to be able to appreciate what she's doing, regardless of what anyone else thinks?
I mean, I don't think I don't think any of these are the former, where it's like they all are getting like their all sense of self and a self-esteem from these competitions. I think that it's more a matter of having an attainable goal to kind of work towards and set clear.
I mean, she literally says, if she, you know, if people think she sucks, then she has nothing. And is the show, my point, my concern is, my question is the show going to push back on that idea itself? You know,
I mean,
because it's simply not true.
It's a matter of like how they perceive it, right? Because she enjoys doing it now, but she would like to be better at it. Now we can, sure, you can get into the semantics of what better means in a context of making something that is artistic or whatever, but she feels like she has places that she can improve, and she wants to get better, and she recognizes that as much as she likes it, she is not like perfect. She's not like there's ways mm-hmm. that she can improve. And so that's like a reflection of her own, you know, self-esteem and her confidence in her ability that mm-hmm. she's like, I'm afraid to like challenge myself to get better because I don't want to do this thing that I'm passionate for and put myself out there and then find out that I wasn't as good as I hoped to be or what I thought
I was. The thing. It's a fear that if she fails, then this isn't, you know, it's worthless. It's not worth anything, which I think is wrong.
The thing is that she's viewing it from this idolization perspective, right? She got mm-hmm. into it because of that specific reader, and she hasn't expressly said it, but it seems very obvious mm-hmm. that she wants to be able to have that same effect. Like whether mm-hmm. or not it's like some selfish thing where she's like, oh, I really want to move people and be famous or whatever. That's not what I'm saying. But like she mm-hmm. wants to be able to move people with her like storytelling, just like that girl was able to.
Right.
This is a way for her to be able to refine that and do that. And what she's kind of saying is she's afraid that she's going to work on this to accomplish that very thing and find out that she cannot do it. Like obviously mm-hmm. the show is hinting at she's very, has the potential to do that thing. I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Right.
But again, she doesn't have the self-esteem. She hasn't like put in the work to have the confidence in herself. She's read a bunch of stories, but she hasn't really had a constructive way to like bounce ideas off of other people or like somebody that is in a position of like authority and tell her like, here's where you can improve. Here's where you really need to like focus on kind of fine tuning things for you to kind of accomplish the goal that you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. I don't think that is putting a value judgment of like, if you cannot like succeed in this very specific purview or framework, that it is completely worthless. I don't think that's what it's trying to impress on the people.
Well, that's certainly what she thinks, essentially.
But that's
explicitly what she says.
That's what she's saying, that she doesn't want to like. Like you said, she doesn't want to suck. Like it's a very clunky like teenager way to kind of go about it. Like if you were to sit mm-hmm. there and like really scrutinize it and break it down,
she doesn't want other people to think that she sucks.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't want. She doesn't want.
And then the idea then is that like, if other people think she sucks, then, you know, again, what she's doing doesn't matter. Now that, which, you know, again, that's just simply not true. Now it's one thing to be like, I want to get better at this thing. There's this thing that I'm doing, this craft that I have, and I want to improve at it. You know, think about it like drawing, for example. I want to get better at drawing. But then at the same time, you know, if someone doesn't like what you've drawn, or like a lot of people don't like what you've drawn, does that mean what you've drawn has no value? Does that mean there's no meaning in drawing anymore?
Well, it depends on what you're drawing for. Like, again, if she's mm-hmm. wanting to impress and have people kind of view her readings and her prose similarly as she saw that other girl's, if everyone thought she sucked, then yeah, that's her failing to do what she wants to do. If you don't really mm-hmm. care and you just want to read a story, however you want to read it, like, then it doesn't matter. Like it.
Well, no. Well, again, there's not like a binary there. Like you can, you know, again, you can want to improve your craft, but just because maybe not everyone is, you know, on your wavelength, you know, and maybe not everyone vibes with the art that you're putting out. What I think, you know, matters at the end of the day is that you have made something that you love.
Right.
And if, you know,
that's what I'm saying. The binary is like, this is a matter of like mm-hmm. what her perception is and what she wants to accomplish. If that is what she wants mm-hmm. to accomplish, then that is the binary. It's a very valid thing to like create something and have value of that thing you created come from other people. Right. It's like talking mm-hmm. about, you know, media where, people are finding their sense of self through other people, like Evangelion, right? Yeah, you find your sense sure. of self through your own inner perspective, but you also have to go through the perspective of others to define those kind of boundaries of who you are. In this case, yeah. if you're defining, if you're, what you're wanting to accomplish is dependent on other people. If you're wanting to move other mm-hmm. people or have other people's take what you've created and get a certain experience out of it, and you fail to do that, and your perspective, you have failed. You can make an argument that mm-hmm. they failed successfully in a way because they have made something that's still of value, but that is not what they were aiming to do with it, right? Mm-hmm. So,
well, again, so I think it's going to be a question of, and maybe we'll see this like come up in various ways. Again, I think it's a matter of like, what if there's like a situation where, you know, she loses the competition, mm-hmm. but she still thinks that she has done like, you know, a great job. You know, how will the show navigate a situation like that? Or maybe it's going to be like a kind of thing where like there's the story that she wants to read and she really likes reading, but there's this other story that maybe she's not into as much, but her voice is much more suited for it. Mm-hmm. And then a question of, you know, so, and as a result, by reading that, she'll do better at the competition. And then how is she going to navigate that? Is she going to go with, you know, what she loves to do, the story that she would much rather read, or is she going to go with what would be more commensurate with what, you know, the judges would want, which will, what would lead her to winning the competition? You know, it's one thing to, you know, want to have other people enjoy your work, but I think you enjoying what you have done should come first and foremost.
It's the thing about your example, it is purely mm-hmm. a matter of perspective, right? They can mm-hmm. do the thing that you're kind of presenting in the binary of like this kind of being a negative thing because she's conforming to these criteria that are kind of arbitrary, right? But they can do mm-hmm. that in a, like, she can choose to do that in a way that's beneficial for her. Like, she can recognize like, oh, I don't typically like reading this sort of story, but this can be challenging for me in a way that's going to push me to improve and gain a better perspective on things because I'm putting my talents towards something that I don't necessarily enjoy from the offset, but it's still part of something that mm-hmm. I enjoy. I still enjoy reading to people. This is just a story that I'm not particularly in love with, right? Like, I think mm-hmm. Medalist this season kind of illustrated this really well, where the mm-hmm. coach was like, oh, do you want to do the dongo path or the donut path or whatever the fuck he said?
The strawberry on
the strawberry the tart. Yeah, the strawberry tart or the...
I don't fucking yeah. know.
Like, he's...
But Medalist is a very good comparison.
Yeah, yeah. He's giving her like these options, and he's like, yeah, just weigh these options based on how you want them to do, and I will make I'll connect the dots and we'll make it work on the back end. It just do what you feel is right for you. And mm-hmm. that illustrates that very well, because she's kind of like, oh, which one is the option I should take? And he's just like, yeah, don't worry about that. Just do what you want to do. And she mm-hmm. picks the objectively worse option of the two, because like it is lowering her score. But he then is able to like figure out a way where he's like, hey, actually, we can actually raise your base score level because we can incorporate this, because you've worked on your balance so much that now we can incorporate something that is going to raise what your base score could be. That's even higher than what it would have been if we'd done this other thing. So like there's these ways that you can do that. And like, yeah, it's kind of conforming to working within these like constraints and these arbitrary kind of criteria, but you can have a perspective on it that is, you know, kind of like a growth mindset kind of thing. And like putting a spin on it where you're like, recognize this is not something I necessarily wanted to do, but it's something that I mm-hmm. benefited from and was able to really take something away from doing when I did it. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely a route. That's definitely a route it could take.
Yeah, that's definitely, we don't know where it's going to go.
It could also very much go down the route of, it kills her passion for reading.
It could.
Which I think.
I don't know what. I mean, I don't know what kind of story this is going to be.
Very depressing.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of story this is going to be. Like, we're three episodes in. I try to know as little as possible about shows we go into. Because I'm like, I just want to watch it and enjoy it. And that's, I don't really read manga. So.
Hey guys, it's like, we're the only fucking people who are theory crafting this fucking show. People do this for like shonen anime.
We're doing this for competitive like reading
or whatever the fuck. Yeah. Fucking look at us. We look like fat, gross fucking pedophiles. Of course we would do this.
Yeah, just look at the Weeb Crew logo. But yeah, I mean, I understand your perspective. Like, it's not that I necessarily disagree with you on a just fundamental level.
Right.
It is an interesting kind of concept or thought experience to like think about, where it's like, I think we haven't talked about it on the podcast, but like just thinking about it one day, I was like, really, when you think about it, the way that we kind of judge art or like media or anything like that is basically, if you take like break it down to a certain point, is basically just like somebody at some point was able to express and vocalize the things that they appreciate about something that was created in such a way that everyone was like, yeah, that should be the standard, right? Obviously, it's much more complicated and nuanced than that, but like just breaking it down.
But
like
someone was able to make a persuasive argument at some
point. And then like, and then that then forms this sort of framework in which people kind of understand and consume things, right? Because you're essentially like, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. Like, you can make like this outsider art, but a lot of that is still contingent on these frameworks, right?
Sure.
Like,
I think
you can't, you have, it's hard for you to push the boundaries and really challenge the norms if you aren't aware of the norms. So a lot of these people that do that are very good conventional artists in that field, right? Like a David Lynch or something, I think was Lex's example yesterday.
Rest in peace, King.
Rest in peace. Yeah, like, he was a very good conventional director.
I mean, the archetypal example is like Picasso.
Yeah.
You, or like Salvador Dali. Like, you look at like the stuff that they were doing before they made schizo shit, and it's like, oh yeah, this is just like, you know, really like conventionally good stuff.
Yeah.
And then they choose, you know, what's that Picasso quote? Like, it took him a lifetime to, like, it took him a year to like learn how to like paint like whoever the fuck, Michelangelo, who did the fucking ceiling of the Sistine Chapel?
I think it was Michelangelo.
Okay. Yeah, it took him like a year to, you know, like, paint like that, but it took him like a lifetime to learn how to paint like a child. and maybe that's like the core thing here, is that when it comes to something, you know, when it comes to art anime that I like, you know, stuff like Ongaku, I think what I find attractive in those anime, what I'm able to most identify with in those anime, are the characters who have a very strong creative voice and personality. They have a clear image in their head of what they know they want to do, what they're interested in, and then they do the thing. Eizouken would be like another example, whereas, you know, in something like, you know, Hibike, there isn't necessarily that sort of like, you know, character with like that like very like strong creative will and opinions about art and what art should be. If anything has come through over the course of this episode, is I have strong opinions on what art should be and how, and people, the way people interact with art.
I find it interesting, but it's like, I value like the indie and like outsider stuff in some capacity. Like, it depends on what, like, it's not like I inherently value them all the same, right? But like at the same time, the value that these things generally have, a lot of it is also still contingent on the framework in which they are working outside of, right? if everybody,
well, it's not even necessarily like an outsider art versus mainstream art. I think you know, a strong, like, you know, creative voices that I think are, like, you know, just really, like, you know, defining and ahead of the game would be like, you know, Swans, Michael Girard, and Lady Gaga. Yeah, it, across the board, you know, you it's in any form, but as long as that sort of like clear idea of, you know, what they want is communicated, I think I can get on board with that.
Mm.
Like, it would have been interesting, honestly, if, like, there was a character. Did when you were in band in high school, was there ever like a student that would also just kind of be like the guest conductor? Like, they would, like, conduct at, like, some rehearsals or stuff. And
we
stuff?
Had drum majors.
Okay,
so we had three people who would go to leadership camps with the section leaders and stuff like that, and they were the conductors for marching band.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We didn't have, like,
they were all students.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean I don't know how it is where you
I don't know. I went to a much smaller school than you. So it was like there was, like, one student who was just, like, really enthusiastic about the idea of becoming, like, a conductor and music director. Mm. So he would also just occasionally conduct either, like, the symphonic or, like, marching band or jazz band or whatever the hell.
You know, the competitions here for marching band, you had to have student drum majors. Like, you couldn't have, like, the teachers conducting. It had to be a fully student run driven show.
Yeah. So it would have been interesting, I guess, if there was a character like that in, like, EBK, who then was like, this is the song that we are doing. And everyone is like, what the fuck? It's like, no sense. You just gave us a bunch of radios.
To radio.
What do you mean we're going to be playing John Cage's 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence? You know, something like that, where it's like a character, you know, because that's kind of, like, you know, what I value in anime, you know, when it comes to art, is that sort of, like, strong perspective on, you know, what art should be. And that's not, I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, I think it's like, you know, it would be kind of weird, though, in a story like Hibike, where it's, like, close to, like, a sports anime. And, like, I mean, it can't be the case, like, depending on, like, what the sport is. But I'm imagining, like, you know, a character in, like, Slam Dunk is like, I play true basketball. Or, like, you know, like, something like that would be kind of weird.
You can get elements of that, like, even in, like, Slam Dunk.
You can get elements of that, so usually in, like, more solo-based sports, honestly.
Well, even, like, Slam Dunk, like, Sakuragi, like, shoots the ball underhanded and, like, does weird shit that's, like, not technically against the rules, but is not, like, the most proficient way to play basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, you get that occasionally in sports.
You can get stuff like that, yeah, but it isn't necessarily, like, as much of a thing,
right?
You know, it would be interesting if there was, like, you know, more of a dialogue and more of, like, a aspect of Hibike Euphonium where they were kind of, like, you know, discussing, you know, in a meta sense, what music should be, what the point of making music in the first place even. Why are they competing? Is that necessary for making art? Stuff like that.
I mean, realistically, that's not conversations you have in high school.
Conversations I was having in high school.
I would bully the fuck out of somebody if they started asking me those questions in fucking high school.
Well, yeah, it needs to be like a weird guy who doesn't talk to anyone else and just kind of plays his instrument very well. And then fucks off and doesn't talk to anyone and just does weird shit on the side.
Well, when they make Hibike Euphonium Season 4, they can have some fat, weird little nerd kid playing a skin flute in a quarter, and it'll just be perfect for you.
Is it going to end? Does it end with Season 3?
It does end. It's over.
Okay.
That's why you're never going to get what you wanted. It's so over.
It's literally never been more over. But yeah, so I don't know, maybe something like that will come up more in Hanashura. Where, I mean, there is like a strong-willed character in the show that's already been kind of like established, but
yeah,
not exactly in like a creative sense, I would say.
I am looking forward to like seeing how they're going to tackle the effort versus talent kind of the dichotomy.
Yeah.
Obviously it's much easier to kind of, what's the term? Not conducive. I can't think about exactly the term I would use, but like
commensurate.
No, like kind of get that.
Agree across vocabulary time.
kind of get the theme across very organically, easy to understand. There, yeah. I've used the word in previous episodes. I can't think off the top of my head. It'll be interesting to see like how they kind of tackle it, since it's not like a sports show where it's like, that's just kind of immediately apparent where it's like, oh, this person is more athletically gifted. Obviously there are things like we kind of talked about, like her voice, you can train your voice. Obviously she's not had like professional training, but she has like trained her voice in some capacity, 'cause she has like practiced to read like this one girl that she's imitating. But like there are voices that are going to sound better for certain things to a larger swath of people, right? Nobody wants to hear my fucking shitty ass like femboy fuck voice. They want to hear fucking bassy.
They want to hear Scamboli reviews like fuck the mic ASMR style.
Super Eye Patch Wolf is
Super Eye Patch Wolf. Yeah.
They want to hear that. They don't want to hear me.
Which, I mean, that would also be an interesting angle, though, is sort of like, you know, learning to love your own voice, learning like what your voice, you know, learning how to use, you know, your flaws to your advantage. Like that David Byrne interview thing where he's interviewing himself for Stop Making Sense, where like the interviewer is like, you don't have a good voice, but you're a singer. How do you do that?
How did I get here?
I use my strengths to my advantage, or something like that.
You may find yourself in an interview.
Well, it's like, you know, again, David Byrne probably wouldn't be winning American Idol, but you'd be hard pressed to tell me he's not a fucking great singer. It's, you know, it's a matter of like,
well, he's like a music producer too, right? He's not just like the singer, right?
Yeah, well, he's like writing music and stuff as well.
Yeah, so like he's I think that's a bit, that's like making music in like a holistic sense as opposed to being just a singer. Like I would assume he approaches it as like using his voice as almost like another instrument, because the product he is making is the song, not
right
singing, not being a singer necessarily. Like he is a singer, but it is like another instrument, another tool for him to use to create the piece that he wants to create, right? It's not like a Britney Spears where it's like that is just her thing. She sings. She doesn't write music. She doesn't produce like a whole song. She just sings the words.
Yeah, pop star type stuff. Yeah.
Well, not even to like pick on pop stuff. Like that's just singers in general for the most part,
right?
Like a lot of them aren't writing.
You go back like you know, to like the 50s and 60s, it was actually pretty uncommon for artists to write their own music. They had other people writing music for them that they would, you know, Frank Sinatra, great example.
Yeah,
although, you know, not necessarily like the greatest voice ever, iconic nonetheless.
Elvis
had a pretty good voice, I'd say.
Yeah,
I could see Elvis doing well on American Idol. American Idol is my metric here. I fucking hate American Idol.
Elvis would do well on American Idol because he had a fucking stage presence.
But like, that is like an interesting topic that I think the show could explore. Whether or not it will, you know, it'd be very interesting if someone, if like someone comes up on stage, starts reading, and they're like, like they have like some fucking weird ass voice, but they just fucking bring the house down. That'd be cool.
I don't know how you would do that. Granted, I'm not, I mean, I had a friend that
we're horribly uncreative people.
Well, I had a friend that was in like in prose and stuff, so I have like a passing understanding from like that context, but like obviously that's not one to one what this show is doing. This show is doing broadcast and reading for broadcast and that kind of thing. So I don't know the rules of what they're doing like intimately enough to where I could like speculate on how you could kind of work within the boundaries in a creative and interesting way.
Yeah.
But I don't, I mean, how it's kind of established, I don't really know. I mean, you outside of just having like a very unique voice that doesn't necessarily sound conventionally good, but ends up being endearing.
What I mean. Like someone who has a voice that you wouldn't expect them like to, you know, do really well at a competition like this, but then they like, holy fucking shit, they come out of left field.
But I don't know if that necessarily would mean a lot in this kind of show. I think it could.
It shows that it doesn't matter, like,
but it would mean
what your voice sounds like at the end of the day.
In that sense, but you're still, they would still be kind of working within the confines and the parameters of the competition. And it would just be like, they just had a unique voice that on the surface and at first, like on first impression, you think sounds bad, but is like unique in a way that kind of endears you and draws you in. But they're still kind of working within that framework. It would have to be like somebody just went on stage and just like read in a way that was completely contrary to like all the like rules and conventional sort of like training that they do for these competitions, but was still like endearing people and like really drove people in. And I don't really know how you would do that.
Could even be someone like, you know, someone with a speech impediment, someone, you know, with like a lisp or something like that, comes on stage. Is it like, you know, like we're watching like a YouTube video, someone had like a speech impediment or something, and it's like, you just gotta own it, you know. If that's what you got, you gotta fucking rock that shit.
Yeah, but again, that's still working within the framework in some capacity.
Sure. But it does kind of blur the lines when it comes to like that idea of like, you know, natural talent versus hard work in this context.
I guess.
You know, it's like a fucking short guy, a short white guy being like one of the best basketball players of all time or something like that, where it's like, yeah, motherfucker did it.
And it's something like this, though. I don't know how, because like someone that doesn't have like a speech impediment or something like that versus someone that was born with a really good voice, like if they're both working equally hard, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you would get that across. Like, you could have them beat other people. But it's like, if they're working within this criteria, I don't know. I guess part of the problem is I think the
person with the speech impediment could win.
Well, I mean, they can, like anyone. Yeah, anybody can win. It's just a matter of like, it's a story. I guess it's a matter of like what the arbitrary criteria you're establishing is and how you're going to work within it.
It's a matter of, what is the point of the story? What's the theme you're meant to get across?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, as it stands, I guess, you know, to bring this all back around, my concern is kind of like, this seems like it could go in a direction where I would be disappointed in it. If there are certain things that it could end up doing where I'm just kind of like, oh, that's a fucking shitty message.
But is it likely? Does it feel like it'd be likely?
More likely than after we watch the first two episodes is what I'll say.
So it's an upward trajectory, but it doesn't necessarily feel likely? Or are you saying it does feel likely?
I don't think there's a greater than 50% chance of it doing it.
Okay.
But the chance is increasing. And maybe, you know, maybe my opinion will like turn around episode 4 or something. I mean, there is a character in the show who is just not interested in like vocal stuff when it comes to broadcasting. They like sound effects.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. So there is, you know, there is like a, like, you know, hope for like, there's a good chance to, so, what the fuck am I trying to say?
There's a good chance it still, it pulls out of the tailspin, you think is it?
Yeah, yeah. So I think there still is a good chance that, you know, it ends up turning out all right. I mean, even if it doesn't, like, I have my problems with Hibike. I still think it's a pretty good show. I don't hate it, but again, it doesn't necessarily resonate with me as much as, like, you know, other shows about art, like Eizouken, or like Bocchi the Rock, stuff like that. Again, Ongaku, things of that nature. So it's just a question of, is this going to be an art show? Is this going to be a sports show?
It's Schreudner's sports art show. It could be either right now.
Spart.
Spart show.
Spart. Yeah. It's a, hey guys, Hannah, go watch Hannah Shura. It's a Spart anime.
Schreudner Spart. Say that fucking five times fast.
Schrodinger Shart. I don't know if it's going to be coming out liquid or solid, but it's coming out one way or the other.
Well, before it's observed, it's both, and also neither at the same time.
Is it? It's better to shit your pants and it's solid, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's a lot harder to shit your pants, though. If you
You're not like the reason why people shit their pants is because it's not solid, and having.
It's like, oh, I thought I just had to fart, and now I need to change my underwear.
Yeah, no, it would be better to shit your pants if it's solid, but you're not likely to run into that issue.
When was the last time you shit your pants?
I think I've ever shit my pants.
You're fucking lying to me.
No.
No, anyone who says they have never shit their pants is a goddamn liar.
I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I've never done it.
You 100% have shit your pants. You just don't want to admit it. Well, I think I've probably shit my pants in the last 3 months.
I mean,
at the very least, I've had a good scare nonetheless.
If I had shit my pants like 20 years ago, why would I not want to say it?
I don't know.
I've just never done it because
tell me. Listen, why are you not saying you shit your pants?
I've only been
what
sick.
Do you mean if you shit your pants? You definitely shit your pants 20 years ago.
No, I've never shit my pants. I've only been
you
sick.
I refuse to believe you have never shit. Go shit your pants. What have your shits been like since having that your fucking like bile duct thing removed?
Not good. But I've never had to shit. Like, it's like, how do I put this? All right. You get cramps and like it's bad, but I've never like actually shat myself. Like,
Have you at least had a scare?
I mean,
have you at least had a goddamn moment where you're like,
define scare?
You're like, I think I just shit my pants.
No,
I need to go to the bathroom. You are lying to me.
I've had a scare in the sense of like, oh, I feel like I'm going to since I've had this surgery. I've never done it. I've never felt like I've never had
like a fart that was just a little bit fucking wet, and you're like, ooh, uh-oh.
Listen, I'm a good little Catholic, but I don't ever release farts. They get absorbed back into my body.
you're just like, women don't fart. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I taught them how not to fart.
I taught all these bitches how to not fart.
Now, if you talk about vomiting, I've vomited all over the fucking place.
Literally, twice. Everyone is fucking vomiting. I would be very surprised if there's not a single person on this earth who has not vomited.
But I've never shat myself.
You are lying. You are a fucking liar. Let this be
clear.
This
is projection.
Mumi is a fucking liar.
This is fucking projection. This bro is like, oh, everyone's fucking shit the pants because I've shit
my
pants.
This is like a common rule that has been passed around for generations. That if you say you have never shit your fucking pants,
when was the last time you shit your pants and why?
Liar.
When was the last time you shit your pants and why?
Last time I shit my pants? Maybe within the last year.
Was alcohol involved? Certainly.
What?
Was alcohol involved?
Maybe the day after. Because, like, you know, again, the way it happens is like, oh, man, I've got like a liquid shit coming. And you're like, all right. There's something going on in my stomach. I need to fucking fart. I fart. And I'm like, oh, no.
See, I think that's the difference. Because I don't just ever just sit there and let one rip.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you're fucking weird.
I don't know why. Is that weird?
So what do you just hold it in?
Well, yeah, if you hold it in, it's just like
It's not good to hold things in, Mumi. You gotta let that shit out.
Well, I let the shit out. But in the bathroom. Where you're supposed to.
Yeah, you're supposed to, but you know, accidents happen.
I mean, accidents happen because, like,
if
you're just like
Chernobyl can happen.
You're just
free flowing.
If there
could be nuclear disasters, you have shit your pants.
I don't see how this is connected to the Chernobyl nuclear disaster.
Accidents happen. Human error, Mumi. Human error.
I don't know what to tell you. it's never recording. Happened.
I'm like, oh no.
See, I think that's the difference because I don't just ever just sit there and let one rip.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you're fucking weird.
I don't know why. Is that weird?
So what do you just hold it in?
Well, yeah, if you hold it in, it's just like
It's not good to hold things in, Mumi. You gotta let that shit out.
Well, I let the shit out. But in the bathroom. Where you're supposed to.
Yeah, you're supposed to. But, you know, accidents happen.
I mean, accidents happen because, like,
if
you're just like
Chernobyl can happen.
You're just
if there could be
like
nuclear disasters, you have shit your pants.
I don't see how this is connected to the Chernobyl nuclear disaster.
Accidents happen. Human error, Mumi. Human error.